This is episode 58 of the Fifth Estate Podcast, Navel Gazing with Jay and Neil.
Folks, Neil Doing here with a word from our friends at Simply Safe. Now, a lot of us get excited for summer because it means going on vacation, spending long days at the beach, maybe taking the kids to an amusement park. But you know what gets a burglar excited for summer? Knowing that you'll do all those things and leave your house empty. Summer is prime time for burglary, so now is the time to protect your home. For a limited time, you can take a whopping $100 off SimpliSafe's special summer package. This is SimpliSafe's biggest ever summer sale. It has everything you need to protect your home. An arsenal of security sensors to secure each door and window. Your SimpliSafe system comes with a panic button, a blaring extra siren, and a wireless connection to authorities and police dispatch. Your family, your home, and everything in it stays safe around the clock. With SimpliSafe, there are no long-term contracts, no installation costs, and no hidden fees. And 24/7 professional monitoring is just $14.99 a month. So this summer, see what SimpliSafe can do for your home. Get $100 off your summer security package at simplisafe.com/ricochet. Hurry, this sale ends July 31st. That's simplisafe.com/ricochet to get your $100 off. It's spelled SimpliSafe.com. SimpliSafe.com/ricochet for $100 off your purchase.
All right. It is time for another episode of the Fifth Estate. I'm Jay Caruso, your co-host, along with Mr. Neil Doing. How are you?
Jay, I'm doing okay, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Got a little bit of a different show for our listeners.
We do.
This time around.
There's no guest this time
around. There is no guest. You know, one of the benefits of being a podcast is that you can depart from your format literally anytime you choose. Or you can use that as an excuse when you have a lot going on and things just don't line up, which is the case this week. But that doesn't mean that we don't have something interesting for you fine people to listen to. And I fully expect that at the conclusion, you will be compelled to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. What do you think, Jay?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A 5-star rating, and then leave one of those nice long reviews. We'd like to hear those. I mean, when you take that extra time to type out a review, and that really means a lot.
It does. It gives us the will to keep on going. And to keep on lining up fantastic guests, which I assure you are coming. We do have some very fine guests for you in the near future. But not this week. This week, Jay and I are going to talk about ourselves.
Yeah, we're gonna regale you with stories about us.
That's right, because, damn it, we're interesting, and we've been in every show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've been in every episode of this podcast, so... It seems kind of like high time that we talked about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had some really good guests lately, some really good shows.
Yeah.
And, so this week has been a little tumultuous, and probably the reason why we don't have a guest, let's explain. Neil was kind of on vacation for a while. I am in the midst of moving.
Yes,
so it's been crazy. So it's like rather than get a guest where we just kind of rush somebody on and really didn't have much, you know, background on what we wanted to discuss, we decided we'll just kind of go it alone this week. But over the next 2 weeks, we've got some really good guests coming up. So
that's right. But you know, Jay, honestly, you do have a very good reason for being busy, and you're moving, as you mentioned, and we did touch on your big news about your new job in a previous episode. But I think it would be good if you told the listeners, you know, what's going on in your life
you know, let them know.
Yeah. So we're just so you know, and you're listening to this because sometimes you never really know when it's recorded. We're recording this on a Thursday. This Thursday, July, what is it, 27th? Is today the 27th? Yeah, today's the 27th. And, and I am leaving here in on the 29th. I'll be driving here from the Atlanta area, actually in Kennesaw, to Dallas, Texas. I am moving to the great state of Texas, and on the 31st, I will begin work at the Dallas Morning News. I will be an editorial writer and an editorial board member. So that's going to be a whole new adventure starting.
Which is a pretty big deal, you know, and I think that you deserve congratulations for getting this job, Jay. You know, it's kind of, I think, encouraging to all those people out there in the blogging world toiling away that, yes, you can get a real job in the media world.
Yeah, you know, it's the whole thing is still kind of surreal to me. I think early on, you know, for the longest time, people who didn't write for, you know, mainstream news outlets, if you were a blogger, you were kind of considered this kind of, you know, substandard kind of writer, you know. The media company Pajamas Media, that was started by several people like Roger Simon and Glenn Reynolds, got its name from I don't even remember who it was now, who basically kind of mocked people who blogged as people who are in their basements in their pajamas writing, that they're not real journalists, that they're not actually people that know how to write. And so they formed that company out of that. But as we've seen over the years, many of the people who, especially if you go back to when blogging really took off, early, you know, probably late after, you know, kind of after 9/11 is when it picked up, and from probably 2002 into 2006 was when blogging was at its zenith. I mean, that was basically at that time was the only kind of social media there was, were blogs. You know, there was, if you go back to 2004, with the election of Georgia, there was no YouTube, there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, there wasn't even MySpace at that point. Blogs were it. That was it. If you wanted to read something that was alternative to the mainstream media, you went and you read certain blogs. And Glenn Reynolds, InstaPundit.com was a huge one. There were several others. Left-wing sites like Daily Coast, you know, were big as well. And I was in the midst of all that. I never got really big.
When did you start blogging?
Oh gosh, 2002 probably.
Really?
Yeah, I had my own site called The Daily Rant. Mm. And, you know, it's like I go to archive.org and I look up some of that stuff and I realize, my God, this is like terrible. But it was fun. I look at it. It was kind of fun. You know, it was, and I never really, some people just stuck with the same one for years. And I juggled around, changed it from politics. I would cover pop culture, sports, and then the Second Amendment and then back to politics. And then really kind of took a break from the whole thing probably in 2008, I would think, after President Obama was elected. You know, I discovered Twitter, and it was just much more, it was easier at that point just to kind of express my opinion quickly in 140 characters, and then Facebook and everything. So it was like I wasn't really much interested in doing the writing thing for several years.
Well, I mean, and Twitter is actually where we came across one another.
Yep.
And I recall that you, after some period of time following me, I don't know what I did, but I don't know what I did to deserve this, but you invited me to start writing for a new little website that you were starting up. This was in 2013.
Yeah, it's in 2013. So this is...
Mitt Romney's loss in 2012 and the conservative movement being like, what happened? And so we were trying to, it was part of that, I think, effort to sort of like bridge the gap between libertarians and conservatives and maybe some of the more moderate people on the right. And and so I got pulled into this and we started writing for the same site, you know.
And that was fun, and you know, the interesting thing is, I like to tell people, is that you know, everybody who, I know you had a little experience writing, but mostly everybody else who started there said that, you know, why are you asking me? I've never written before. And the first few times I had to go through their first drafts of stuff that they were writing, it was obvious that was the case, but it was, that's not a knock on them. That's just, you know, when you're used to doing something, it flows a little easier. When you're brand new at something, it needs work.
Or when you just have raw talent.
Yeah, which like I don't have.
Some people I know.
Yeah, I don't have that. Some people do, and but it worked out well, and it was funny because there was nobody. I mean, everybody I know from there, I knew from Twitter. That was it. I didn't know him from any other place. Hadn't met anyone yet. I mean, Neil and, you know, you and I would eventually meet and hang out in person and everything like that. But at that point, it was just Twitter. That was it. And, yeah. And you know, for anybody that's listening, I mean, long story short, it was just like I just wanted to start the site where, you know, it was like we'd have some thoughtful commentary that was a little different from just the, you know, throwing stuff at a wall and just hoping that it sticks. And you know, it never really went super popular, but we people paid attention. Some people that had influence paid attention at times. So
some things got passed around. Some things got we got a few hate reads, as I recall.
Yes.
Some long-standing enmity between certain people and myself, for instance, which I maintain was all a setup. Jay, you would email me and say, hey, you want to write about Ted Cruz and how he sucks, and then I'd be like, yes, I do, and then I would write it, and I would get like all this hate mail, even though Jay gave me the idea. And,
well, one of the ones that
was a clever trick.
Yeah, there was one. And Neil is right. I did, because Neil is such a really good writer, and so I would set him up, and Neil knows how to be very subtle with his insults, and. So when there was like, I saw this whole libertarian thing where they were talking, you know, the whole conversation about fusion between the libertarian wing and the conservatives and, you know, how that would go. And of course, libertarians are always like, we're not going to do that. Of course, you know, when you look at the Libertarian Party, they have like zero victories to their name. But, you know, they always seem it's incumbent upon conservatives to kind of like align with them as opposed to them kind of coming towards us. And Neil did this piece where he basically took off on libertarians with that kind of mindset, and sure enough, it was there are still just like hundreds and hundreds of comments on that post, which was really good. And then when there's another one, we talked about like conservative stars, and
right,
and Neil went and stuck a line in there about two particular conservative heavyweights in the movement, or maybe, you know, maybe not so much anymore with Ann Coulter, but her name was in there. But Mark Levin's name was mentioned, and then Neil was reminded every day for several weeks that he hadn't written a book.
That's right. Yes, I came in for all sorts of abuse, and I still do today, and I owe that to my friend Jay Caruso, my good friend Jay.
But the thing that I had told, and this is give one little more piece of history here for people, is I told people at the start of that, I said, look, I said, if you guys can get paying gigs from this, if this kind of like launches into that, I said, that would be really cool. And sure enough, Ben Domenech comes along and creates the Federalist and winds up plucking away two of my best writers, Neil and Amy Otto. And they eventually became senior contributors over at the Federalist. And I was very happy about that.
It created a great opportunity, you know, for a number of people. And so, you know, that was our first real collaborative effort. And right. I would say it was a success in that way.
Yes.
In getting people to sort of figure out how to actually do this, what kind of, you know, feel out what will get purchased in that media space and on social media. But yeah, you know, and after a while, actually, I mean, you know, your own paid gigs sort of came along. So talk about that, man. How did you go from, you know, blogger in the early 2000s to occasional blogger to starting a little website to getting actually paid to write? How'd that happen?
Well, it was funny. I don't remember why I mentioned something. I think I just wanted to write something for the Federalist or something that was outside of that. And I sent, this was right around the time that, Brendan Eich was, was forced to step down from Mozilla, and immediately conservatives started talking about boycotting Mozilla. And I was thinking, you know, this is the wrong way to go. Really, where conservatives should be focusing is on California law that, you know, requires people to their names and their employers and everything if they make a political donation to a Now, political donations to politicians are open and everybody's allowed to see that. But normally, if you donate to some kind of cause or to an organization or something like that, then those donations can be private, as they should. I believe that they should. But in California, that's not the case. And so Brendan Eich's name showed up in this database. Somebody found it, and you know, they leaked it to the media. And he donated money to Proposition 8, which was the proposition to ban gay marriage in the state of California, which actually wound up passing.
Yeah. And God, that seems like 150 years
doesn't
ago,
doesn't it? And so they found out about this, which was several years after. We're talking 5 or 6 years after it all happened. And yet he was unceremoniously kind of like run out of his job as a result. And so I wanted to write about that. And I emailed Ben Domenech over at the Federalist and I said, hey, I've got this idea. And he was just like, yeah. He goes, hey, we pay for that. So here's what we'd pay. I was like, oh, okay. And this was sometime early in spring of 2014. And that was the first time that I had gotten paid for writing something. And it didn't, like, it wasn't like, oh, okay, so now I'm on a roll, let's go. It actually didn't. You know, I went back to writing, you know, at Pocketful Liberty for the rest of 2014. And it wasn't until, I can't even remember now if it was early 2015 or late 2014, when there was an opening at Legal Insurrection for a writer there. And I wound up, you know, kind of applying for it and spoke with them and I wound up getting it. And that turned into a regular, that was like a regular paid thing, which was kind of cool. And then it went to, it was summer of 2000. Yeah. It was at the summer of 2015 at the Red State Gathering when Leon Wolf, who was taking over for Eric Erickson, invited me to be a front page contributor at Red State. And that writing at Red State, it's funny because even it's tough when you're writing, having an editor is really, 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 really a great thing. Red State, unfortunately, is kind of like a blog. And basically you have to write and publish. You know, your job is to kind of produce content there. And unfortunately, a lot of times that content doesn't translate very well without an editor. And it just looks bad sometimes. And even now, This is years later, I'm still, sometimes I go back and, or people will say something like, what the hell are you saying here? And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, I wrote that at 5 a.m. It's awful. So, but at the same time, having to write as much as I did helped me over the long run because, you know, it allowed me to learn how to write something quickly. So after a while it was like, hey, we have something here, but we need you to push this out in like an hour. Can you do that? 700 words? Okay. You know, and you can still do it. And so
that's something I never mastered, Jay, because I agonize over everything in my writing. I have to try to pick just the right word, or I have to like somehow tap into that vein of creative inspiration that's just as like, you know, the assurance of like, yeah, this is exactly right and funny and people are going to love it or hate it, as the case may be, whatever, it's what I want it to be. You know, that feeling is very elusive for me. But the idea of making a living in the writing world where you do have to write, and you have to write when you don't feel like writing, you know, so basically you're saying you just got to do it.
Yeah, you have to do it. It's funny. That's one of those things where people always ask, you know, how do I become a writer? Well, start writing. Yeah, it sounds stupid, but that's basically what it is. You have to, like, stop talking about what you're going to write about, stop thinking about what you're going to write about, and start putting stuff down. And it doesn't even matter if it's something that doesn't wind up getting published. It's like, but you're going through the motions of doing it. And writing stuff, sometimes I've had this problem. You try, and you're sitting there, and you're trying to start something, and you just can't. There are times when you can sit there and blow through 1,000 words in an hour easily. And other times when it'll take 2.5 hours to do 600 words simply because you're having trouble doing it. It's a weird phenomenon. I don't like the term writer's block. I don't necessarily know if that exists. I think it's a matter of, you know, you just have to go and you have to do something. You have to start. And so you have to write a lot, but you also have to, you know, don't be afraid. This is the one thing that I always tell people. If you know there's a good writer out there that you like, get in touch with them and ask them to look over something that you've written. 9 times out of 10, they'll be like, yeah. I mean, they may not be able to do it right at that moment, but they'll be happy to edit something for you. Or
yeah,
say,
I mean, this is a secret people don't seem to understand. Other people like to help you.
Yes.
It's actually very flattering when you are in a position to help someone else, like from it's not altruism all the time. Sometimes it's just because they're decent people, but a lot of times it gives people a little bit of, oh, look at me. I'm important and I'm good at what I do. Someone asked me to help them, so of course I will, and I'll feel great about it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So people, like you say, don't be shy. Ask for help
and don't be afraid of, you know, when they send it back, if it looks like, you know, I just wrote something. I'm going to give you an example. I just wrote something for National Review. It hasn't been published yet, but I sent it to Charles Cook, and he sent it back to me, and he even said, I've made some big changes here. And I first looked at it, and it looked like a sea of red. And I was like, the only thing that didn't have any corrections was a block quote from another story that I had in there. what had happened was most of it was really him kind of shifting things around. See, that's where a good editor comes in, because they can help you.
Yes.
You keep your voice and what you're saying, but they're saying, you know what, here's what we do. We'll structure this a little bit better and it'll tell the story better.
Yes.
And so basically that's what a lot of it was. A lot of it was moving stuff around to kind of create a better narrative. And sure enough, when I read it through after looking at it, comparing it to what I originally submitted to what he had kind of come together with, and then he asked me to create a different conclusion. And when I read it, I was like, okay, this is a much stronger piece. That is why editors are so critical to good writers. As much as these writers are great, and, you know, talk about some of my favorites, like Charlie Cook and Kevin Williamson, I guarantee that what you see when you're reading on that page is not what they submitted originally. And that's not a knock on them. It's just what happens. I mean, not only with National Review, and I'll kind of explain this, I don't think I'm giving away any secrets. It's like you'll submit something to them, and Charles will look at it and edit it, send it back to you. Then it goes to another editor or two. And I've seen them come back with stuff where they've edited what Charlie had written.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen. And some people have little difficulty dealing with that. They think, oh my God, you hated it because you edit. No, an editor tries to help you make something better. That's essentially what it does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, people, you know, you need to be less sensitive about, you know, this product that you've struggled to get it onto the page, whatever, you know, it's a little scary to send it to someone else and say, what are they going to do to it? But you just have to bite the bullet and do it, because no writer is flawless in their execution.
No.
It could be as simple as, you know, a few too many commas, or, you know, just a transposition of letters, whatever. There's going to be something. And so you need to have an editor. And an editor doesn't need to be somebody professional, though that certainly helps, someone with experience in it. Just another set of eyes, right, Jay? I mean, if you are trying to write something, show somebody.
Yeah, show somebody, but try to find somebody who is a good editor. And here's the reason why, is that some people are good writers. They don't necessarily make good editors. And vice versa. There are people who are great editors who don't who aren't necessarily very good writers. Editing is a strength that some people have, and some people have it better than others. Now, somebody may look at something that you write, and they will correct some grammar, they'll correct some punctuation, but they may not say to you, you know what, you have too many adverbs in here, too many adjectives. Let's take this out. Let's take this out. You know, this paragraph should go down here. It's stronger when it's written here. You don't, there's a classic scene from All the President's Men where Woodward sees that Bernstein is like, you know, submitting stuff over his. And, you know, he's basically saying, he goes, your first paragraph has to have more clarity. He goes, you got to know who's who. He goes, I can't tell from reading this whether Coulson works for Hunt or Hunt works for Coulson. It's a simple little thing like that, but it can make a piece effectively much stronger by doing that. And so that's why having a good editor is good. And I also recommend, there's certain books that you should read. If you're listening to this and want to write, pick up Stephen King's On Writing, which is a terrific book. Is basically how he kind of goes through his process, and then he kind of gives people practical advice. But go ahead and look at other stuff. I mean, pick up if you're going to be writing about news, pick up a Associated Press style guide and start writing in that format. Look at it. How do you capitalize something? President isn't always capitalized. The only time you're supposed to capitalize president is if you're writing President Trump. If you write the president, president is not capitalized. A lot of people don't know that. It's a simple little thing, but you'll learn a lot more.
Yeah, that is a good book. I've read that one as well. So Jay, I think I'm about done talking about you, but I've got one more question for you, and this one's a doozy. Now earlier, you mentioned that bloggers were somewhat dismissed in the beginning. Mm-hmm. As people sitting in their basement, writing in their pajamas. But I wanted to sort of take your temperature on this idea. It's like, do you think that we've come back around to a point where, blogging opened the door for some very talented people, but it lowered the barrier to entry to a point where a lot of pure crap is amplified?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of garbage out there.
So I guess I'm saying, have we circled back around to a point where something like print media, mm-hmm. a newsroom, sort of a custodial mentality for the public's consumption of news, have we circled back around to where that is once again perhaps the more useful way to be?
It depends. I mean, there's still some really good websites out there that are still technically, if you look at them, they're technically blogs, and there's a lot of sections of mainstream newspapers. So for example, say like The Fix at Washington Post. The Fix is essentially a blog. There's a couple of different people that write for it. There's certain things that they cover, but the way they do it, is a blogging style. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you're right. There's a lot of crap out there, and the crap, unfortunately, is very popular. I'll call one out: Gateway Pundit. Gateway Pundit is a shit site. They're garbage. There's no journalistic integrity there. Not even from my blogger's point of view. They're just total junk.
How's the writing? I haven't ever read.
The writing's
them.
Atrocious. I mean, it's really? It's just bad. It's similar to some of the stuff. I'm sorry. Some of the stuff at Breitbart. Mm-hmm. Is poorly written. Some of it is very well written. They've got some talented journalists there. I can't sit there and say that much about their content, but yeah. Gateway Pundit is just awful. But
well,
yet
so,
it's very
so
popular.
So much of blogging is just it reads like this breathless, conspiratorial tone. Just like they ran in through the door like Kramer from your favorite show,
Seinfeld. Yeah,
from Seinfeld, they just like they've got the crazy eyes and the hair, and they've got to tell somebody something, and it doesn't matter if it's true, it doesn't matter if it's based in facts, as long as it's sensational enough, it'll get shared around, and that's all that really matters to I think a lot of places is sort of circulation and traffic and that sort of thing, which is sort of the nature of the beast. Can't really escape the nature of the, you know, the media industry there, but it does, I think, incentivize some bad behavior.
Yeah, sir, it certainly does, but there's, you know, there's,
but we're never guilty of that.
No, we're never guilty. there's opportunities out there. The thing I will say to people is, you know, you got to plug away. It's like, I think last year, 2016, I had set a goal to get published at National Review, and I did. And then another goal was to get published at the Weekly Standard, and I did. This year I was published at the Atlantic, which was, it's crazy, you know, and you know, give a shout out to the people at the Atlantic. They're wonderful people there and just terrific writers at the Atlantic. You may not agree with a lot of what they're going to say and what they write, but they're just excellent writers there. So, you know, that's the other thing. Another last piece of advice is don't dismiss a source simply because you're not going to agree with their point of view. So read Talking Points Memo, read The Atlantic. Mother Jones, maybe, you know, sometimes they're a little crazy. I mean, you don't have to go. I wouldn't sit there and say, you know, The Nation, stay away. Daily Coast, stay away. But broaden your horizons on what you're going to read. Read The New York Times. Read The Washington Post. Stop worrying about whether or not it's fake news. It's a matter of learning how other people are writing, and that, and you pick that up, and you'll just get better.
I mean, at the very least, you have to know what the people who disagree with you are saying about what you think.
True.
You know, it's good to read the coverage of your side, quote unquote, from the other side. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's great advice, Jay. Great advice. So hopefully all those aspiring writers out there, both young and old, it's never too late.
Yeah.
We'll take some of that to heart and keep plugging away at it and improve. But enough about you.
Yeah, enough about me. I'm tired of talking about myself.
Enough about you. Let's talk about something else. Have you seen Dunkirk yet?
I have not. I'm actually,
I mean, you are a huge Nolan fanboy. So
I am. But I just haven't, because with everything going on, I haven't had time, but I have located the IMAX theater in Dallas where I will go see it when I get over there.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. That must be very nice. Have an IMAX theater nearby.
Yeah, it'll be about 20 minutes from where I'm staying, so it'll be nice and easy to get over there.
Yeah, but Dunkirk apparently is getting very